you're motoring.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. That's 855-915-WMFO. Punch it into your phone. Put it on redial. Call us up. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, we are going to depress you and make you sad
more
and
so
angry
than you already are depressed.
Yes. We're going to depress you and make you sad and angry as we talk about 9/11 and the legacy of 9/11, which was 17 years ago yesterday.
God, that's so crazy.
But the reason I bring it up this year and not in most years is because it's day and date. You know, 9/11 was on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I was going to say 9/11 was on a Tuesday. I was thinking that yesterday.
Yeah.
I was, because I remember, you know, like everyone yesterday was posting, like, where were you when it happened? And I was like, I'm trying to think of what my schedule was at that time in the morning, because I was a sophomore in high school. But I was like, it had to be a Tuesday, because I had, oh, we'll talk about it later. But yeah. I figured out, same with you, that it was, I was like, this is like the exact part of the week that we were in when this happened.
And somewhat similar weather, although not, it was a beautiful, clear day when it happened 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is something about it falling on the same day is just sort of like, yeah.
It's eerie.
Yeah. Because all the usual things are going on that were going on then that are going, like Miss America and Fashion Week and all that sort of stuff. So we'll be talking about that later tonight.
We shall indeed.
Plus, we'll have all the usual goofiness that you've come to know and love us for.
We're goofy. I didn't know that.
Well, you are. I'm
okay. That makes more sense.
I'm the voice of reason and consistency.
And I'm the intelligent goof.
And then we have Shay.
And then there's Shay.
Oh, you know what? Wow. I'm not the intelligent one. I used to be the intelligent one because we used to play this in the middle of the show,
mm-hmm.
and I, for whatever reason, still think we play this in the middle of the show.
Well, no, but like we've combined the news and Did You Hear?
So yes,
it's,
I know.
It's, you know.
And it's like,
it makes sense for you to have it on right now.
This is throwing me, no, because I just logged what I used to play at this time.
Oh, you mean in terms of the whole type in every song you played?
Which is, yeah, which is the
I'm doing, isn't that a really good impression of that song?
Newsroom by Robert Arway from the Wonderful World of Music.
Oh my God, that song has a name?
Yeah, it was made for a local news radio station that was, or a local radio station.
I mean, it does sound very, it does sound quite newsy.
Anyway, let's get down to whatever it is that's going on around here. The news and Did You Hear collapsed into one. Hey, if you've been gone all summer and you're just back, yeah, we retooled the show a little bit and it got better. So stick around.
Yeah, woody woot. Okay, so in local news, I'm going to go with Faneuil Hall teenager.
Usually not a good combination, Faneuil Hall.
No, and this is particularly bad.
And the teenager. I'm guessing shooting?
No.
Stabbing?
No.
Public nudity?
No, but this, I imagine this dude would do that too. A New Hampshire man faced a judge on Monday.
Oh, this thing. Yeah.
Yes, after he allegedly offered a young teen's parents cash to buy their daughter before trying to drag her away in Faneuil Hall. Alfred Patterson, who is 27 of Raymond, New Hampshire, appeared in Boston Municipal Court on charges of enticement of a child under 16 and attempted kidnapping of a child. At the scene, the victim and her parents told officers that a man, who was later identified as Patterson, allegedly approached the trio and offered to buy the 13-year-old girl from her parents. The victim's parents told officers he showed them a significant bundle of money and said, "I'm rich. How much to take her out?" Yeah, because all the rich dudes are from Raymond, New Hampshire. But then when they refused again, he apparently grabbed the girl by the arm and tried to drag her away before the father intervened. And then he fled on foot and then was located and apprehended on Washington Street, which anyone that knows downtown, he didn't make it very far.
I don't know that it qualifies as enticement if you offer to pay the parents.
Is that more like solicit? I mean, it's still totally illegal. It's just, I don't know if they're charging him with the proper thing.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we got the charges right here. I don't know what this gentleman is thinking.
Oh, well,
he's from New Hampshire, so they're hard to figure out.
What he said to police was that that all he did was ask the victim for her Instagram account, and after the girl's mother said she needed to talk to her first, he responded, "I'm rich, though." I like the focus on the "I'm rich."
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're rich, so you can totally hang out with my 13-year-old daughter unsupervised.
Yeah.
You big old creepster.
Sir, I'm sure you're familiar with the history of Faneuil Hall, but you can't buy humans there anymore. We've stopped doing that.
It's been at least like 5-6 years since we did that.
Yeah, maybe we do need to change the name of Faneuil Hall, because people are still coming down thinking they can buy humans, and that's not... that's not what they do there anymore.
Or just change the name of it, because even having lived in Boston my entire life, I can never spell it properly.
Well, between the people...
Every time I type it in, I'm like, this is it. And then the little squiggly red line goes under it, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Between the people who can't spell it and the people who can't pronounce it, we probably are just better off renaming it Quinky Market.
You know what? Don't give sass to Quincy.
It's Quinky Market.
Oh, God, I hate you.
Quinky, that's where you're from, right? Quinky?
No, I am from Quincy, Massachusetts.
Quinky?
It's one of the birthplaces of our country.
It's spelled Quinky. Heard you guys threw up a John Hancock statue the other day. Good on you.
We do like that, dude.
Third Congressional District.
Third Congressional District. Why, I haven't the faintest.
So we had the primary like a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
We still don't know who won the Third Congressional District.
Oh, I did hear about this.
Where 10 people ran, either Lori Trahan or Dan Coe won. There's something like 121 votes separating them. So there is going to be yet another recount. That's not the interesting part of the story, though. The interesting part of the story is that Secretary of State Bill Galvin has taken control of the Lowell and Lawrence voting committees because of irregularities in the information that was submitted to the Secretary of State's office. So
real tight shit we're running here.
So Bill Galvin's basically saying, I don't know if you're incompetent or there is fraud going on here, but either way, it's not happening on my watch. Therefore, I'm in charge now. And that's not a good look for... Not a good look for Lawrence or Lowell. Like, Lawrence... Apparently, according to Secretary of State Galvin, the issue in Lawrence has to do with outdated technology and old voting machines and what have you. The issue in Lowell has to do with ballots that were improperly stored and accounted for. I have a feeling that it has a lot to do with ballots that were improperly stored and accounted for in both cities.
I was going to say, that does sound very Lawrence-like.
Yeah.
No offense, Lawrence, but I mean, come on. We have to be able to recognize ourselves, you know?
So, you know, we'll see how this turns out. And of course, no one is ever going to be found guilty of anything. But when you have the Secretary of State inserting himself in the middle of a congressional race, that's a bad sign. That's bad things are going on up there.
Yes, yes, yes.
Go Spinners.
So in national news, I'm going to go Amber Geiger.
Amber Geiger. Wow, you could have thrown a half a dozen different things at me and I would have got that.
Officer Amber Geiger.
Oh, is she the woman in Texas that shot and killed
neighbor.
Yeah, shot and killed her next door neighbor. The mother came out today and basically said, why don't you come clean about what was going on here? Because we're not getting a satisfactory answer on why said neighbor was shot.
Yeah, it doesn't. So this police officer, she basically said that she was coming back from her shift on Thursday night and accidentally entered the victim who is, why can't I see his name? His name is Botham John. And when she walked in, it was dark. She saw like a shadowy figure, assumed it was someone breaking and entering, and shot. And after, this is the point she makes sure to make, after giving verbal warning, shot him. Okay.
I don't think she gave verbal warning.
I don't either. Especially she was still in full uniform, which means that her gun was still like attached at the ready.
Yeah. No body cam, I'm assuming. Would have heard if there was body cam.
Well, and also, of course there's no body cam. And also, the thing that really struck me about this is that, so they live in this complex that has the same kind of keys my sister has, but they're like a little magnet you wave in front. And she said the door was ajar, so she just walked in. So she's saying that she thought, like, she mistook it for her apartment.
Okay.
I have lived in all different kinds of buildings, and I am, how you say, a bit klutzy and haphazard sometimes. I have only once walked into the wrong door anywhere, and it was my freshman year of college during spring weekend. I don't think I have to say any more than that. And the door was unlocked. I went into someone who had the exact same room as me, just one floor below.
Right.
But that, I was 18 and a dummy and inebriated.
I'll give someone the benefit of the doubt on that because I don't know what this place looks like.
I was going to say, I mean, it could, they did make a point to say like the layouts of the apartments are almost identical.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen those apartments in New York City, the studio, like high rise apartments.
Oh yeah. That's my sister's starter apartment. They call it, she lives in Normandy Heights. It was called Dormandy because they just look like a giant dorm complex.
Yeah. The efficiencies where you get off the elevator and it's just a hallway of doors. It's just a hallway of doors as far as the eye can see. So there are a lot of situations where I could see somebody walking into the wrong apartment. I have a feeling that she noticed the door was ajar and immediately pulled out her gun because she thought it was her place and someone was inside and then saw the shadow move and just started pulling the trigger.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, she's been a police officer for 4 years. So it's like you do have a bit of that instinct. Obviously, but she was off duty, and I imagine, obviously I'm not super familiar with police protocols, but I imagine if there's a suspected breaking and entering, the protocol is not to walk in and start shooting at the first thing that moves.
No, you're supposed to call for backup.
I was gonna say, you're supposed to call for backup. Exactly. And like, obviously she's still in full uniform. She probably still had her radio attached to her as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm interested to see how this... So she's been charged with manslaughter, and opinions vary on whether some people think it could be upgraded to murder. Some people think that based on the details of the story that she might just get a quick slap on the wrist. So I'm very interested to watch this story unfold.
Yeah, I think at the very least you're going to get a man... Yeah, I don't see a murder charge coming out of this.
I was going to say, I think manslaughter will be like the compromise to at least appease his family enough. Like, okay, she got charged with something... Without, I don't want to say blowing it out of proportion, but you know, without making too much of a ruckus.
Yeah, they'll prevail in the civil suit because if
I was going to say we may have an OJ on our hands. And yeah, no, I don't mean that he killed his ex-wife.
There tends to be no minimum sentence for manslaughter, which means 5 years probation, and you got to turn in your badge or whatever it is, but. The family is not going to get justice out of the criminal courts on this one. I will tell you that right now. Florence.
Oh, she's a-coming.
Yeah.
Florence is a coming. Yeah, she's a...
Hope you like rain.
Yeah. The federal emergency officials said that Hurricane Florence could batter parts of the coastal north... parts of coastal North and South Carolina with hurricane conditions for 24 hours straight or more, and could bring up to 40 inches of rain in its center.
Yeah, that's kind of a standout number there, as they're talking about rain in, measured in feet.
Oh, yeah.
Rather than in inches.
Oh, yeah. Well, and especially for as far north as, I mean, I'm going to knock on wood, but especially for somewhere as far north as the Carolinas, I mean, typically they still get a good brunt of things, but typically by the time it reaches there, it will, if it hasn't been brought down a category or two, it has been established as a tropical storm.
Yeah.
Usually it's not, they're still calling it a category 3 for when it makes landfall.
They get hit by ones and twos, and there's a possibility it could be a category 4 when it hits.
Yeah.
A category 3, by the way, has winds of 130 miles an hour, and they're expecting a storm surge of 15 feet on the Outer Banks and Cape Hatteras and Hatteras Island and places like that. So not one to mess around with.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I loved about like reading the various forms of news coverage about it and seeing the varying opinions of meteorologists. And by that, I mean like how some of them are dumb. Because they were like, well, it got downgraded to a Category 3. It's like, yeah, that's still a huge, crazy hurricane. Yeah. Like, that is still big, fat hurricane. Like, if it got downgraded to a tropical storm, I'd be like, yeah, okay, yeah, we can calm down a little bit. But, I mean, Category 3 is not anything to turn your nose up at. That's still going to be a... to be a very, very, very intense situation for the people of the Carolinas. And it makes me sad, too, because one of my favorite cities in the country is Charleston, South Carolina, which just so happens to be right on the coast. So I guess we're going to find out, though, if those southern mansions that they built all those years ago along the waterline really have that good old-fashioned American craftsmanship. Oh, Derek's in a heated conversation with a caller. I'm very excited about this.
I am. We have a caller.
We have a caller.
First name, and where are you at, caller?
I'm Mark from Medford.
So that's where we are.
We were in Medford as well. We're probably just up the street from each other. But anyway, you wanted to weigh in on the shooting down in Texas. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, I was really just saying that if it was a private individual that walked into that apartment and did the same thing, there wouldn't be any question there would be a murder charge, that they were wrong and it never should have happened.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
But she's a police woman. Somehow, it's different.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
That doesn't really carry any weight with me.
Well, and that's, I was going to say, that's actually, thank you for bringing that up, Mark, because that was, in doing my research on this story, that was one of the things that struck me, is the critics of the way this case is being handled. That's precisely what they're saying, which is, well, what if she didn't have officer before her name? Would she be being treated the same way? And especially in light of, in the past, you know, 5 years to a decade, all of the things, all of the issues that have been coming up with the police department, I definitely agree that it doesn't really sit right. And you'd think that they'd almost want to make a point to show that she was just a citizen at that moment.
That's exactly right.
I think you may have tapped into one of the, one of the interesting aspects of this, Mark, which is, the law is enforced by law enforcement, and, you know, I have a tremendous amount of respect for cops, a lot of good hardworking cops out there, a lot of good cops out there. There are a few bad cops out there that are wrecking everything, but they do have a tendency to protect their own.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying they should cover each other's butts, but it is human nature as well. You know, like, it's just like if I was in Dorchester and I saw a fight between a bunch of Irish kids and a bunch of Italian kids, who do you think I'm siding with? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And not because I'm like, oh, this is a smart thing to fight about. Just, it's like human nature to kind of want to protect your own. Not even human nature, animal nature.
Here's my prediction. At some point in this case, someone is going to use the phrase, well, her training told her, ...
Oh, I can't wait to hear what's after those ...
Yeah.
Cannot wait.
All right, Mark. Thank you.
Mark, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you for your call.
And agreeing with me. I love when people do that.
Yeah. We got to do something about the callers agreeing with Shay. But we appreciate your call. Hope you keep listening.
All right. Well done.
Have a great night.
I like Mark.
Yeah.
Mark's a good chap.
No, Mark brings up an excellent point in this.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I'm glad, like I said, I'm not even kidding. Like, I was like, I'm forgetting to mention something about this.
Yeah.
And Mark hit it on the head.
The blue wall closes around its own.
Yeah.
And one of the issues that comes up over and over again is that the blue wall closes around its own for the good guys and for the bad guys.
Yeah.
Because it's just sort of an understood thing, you know? I'm going to stand up for you today, you're going to stand up for me tomorrow. And sometimes you wind up with good cops standing up for bad people.
Well, know? And there is, I must say, there is something incredibly poetic about the fact that she was wearing her uniform when this happened.
Yeah.
Like, she'd still be having the same treat. I don't want to throw around the word bias, but heck, biased treatment that she's getting if she was dressed in street clothes. But there's something, you said, there's something very poetic about the fact that she was in the blue, you know?
So hopping back over to our friends down in the Carolinas.
Yeah, my poor little, that's what, while you were talking to Mark, you guys were totally ignoring me. But that's what I was saying is one of my favorite cities in the country is Charleston, which is right there on the water. South Carolina, it's a city.
Yeah, I know it is.
Are you kidding? You don't like Charleston? They have giant mansions you can go on ghost tours in. It's a blast.
Yeah, so does Newport, and it's not 90 and humid all summer.
Yeah, but
Newport doesn't have
sticky fingers, which is one of the best wings places I've ever been to.
Okay.
Neither here nor there, but I do think it's like, I mean, so many of like the old school southern mansions are right on the water, so it will be interesting to see how good that old southern craftsmanship it.
So what you're saying, Shay Spillane, is that you enjoy traveling to the south to tour plantations.
That's what
you're saying.
They're not plantation houses.
I'm hearing a couple of dog whistles here, but that could just be me.
Charleston's a city. Plantations are in the country. They're not plantation houses. Are you kidding? It's like when I went there, I was like, this looks like the nice part of Quincy. All the houses are like 15 feet from each other. They're gorgeous, but they're like 15 feet from each other. Oh, shut up.
You're getting the side eye for that.
I'll rip it out. that escalated quickly. In world news, let's go Pope Francis.
Pope Francis, is this the announcement today?
The announcement.
Yeah, Pope Francis has invited bishops all over the world to gather in Rome in February. Not for the Winter Papal Olympics, but to talk about sex harassment and sexual abuse, which he says is the work of the devil.
Yes.
The devil, kids, the devil made the priest do it.
I say, and here I thought the devil only caused masturbation.
Could we not invoke the devil on this one?
Like, honestly, this is why I can't be religious anymore. Our longtime listeners know I was raised super Catholic, but having someone try to be like, the devil did this, I laugh in their face. I'm like, do people actually say that genuinely anymore? Did they ever, for that matter?
I believe.
And if so, why?
Correct me if I'm wrong here, Shay, because I think you follow Yul Poppy a little more closely than I do.
I do.
I'm
not religious anymore, but still do the sign of the cross when an ambulance goes by.
This is the same Pope that said the biblical definition of hell is not really what hell is. Didn't he say that back in the early days?
He did, which was so apt of him, because if we know anything about the Bible, people really like leaving it open to interpretation.
Yeah. So now
or open for edits, actually, is a more accurate way to put that.
So now we've gone from that to the devil is responsible for the child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church. I know the Pope is infallible, and I'm not going to tell Yul Poppy that he's wrong. But I am going to say it was not the devil that molested those kids. It was the priests.
Yeah.
And the Monsignors and the bishops and the archbishops and the cardinals and everybody else in the church hierarchy.
Et cetera, et cetera, yeah. Et cetera.
Not so much.
See how
the
I pronounce it Italianly? Like, because the Vatican's in Italy.
Is that like Lavazza?
Il Papo.
Lavazza.
Bellissima. But, well, I did, honestly, again, I agree, the whole, like, it's the devil thing. I'm like,
please stop.
But there is, and this is just the theory, of course, though, you know, I'm always right, so it's probably more like fact. I do think that part of him bringing that into it and like making that statement, I don't know that that's actually what he believes as much as it's like when Donald Trump was running for president and would go to Kentucky and act like he was a blue collar guy. Like the Pope knows his audience. Super religious people are going to be more comfortable with this meeting happening if they're like, they're going to talk about how to stop the devil from making the priest do that.
Here's the thing.
Like that's, and I'm not saying that's definitely true, but just, I mean, he, as far as popes that we've had, he doesn't seem like he's a complete moron.
He may or may not be speaking allegorically. The problem is, because he is, you know, the voice of the Catholic Church, the guy who talks to God.
He is, I would say he's the voice of God.
When you make a statement like that, no one is going to take it allegorically.
Everyone's going to take it literally.
Oh, so you think the devil did that? Okay. That's not what happened, and we're not interested in your solution here.
I would say whenever people say stuff like that, I have to stop myself from just pinching their cheeks and be like, aren't you cute?
Yeah. Because it's sort of like, I mean, normally I will divorce optics from what somebody means because you have to do that. People don't always speak as eloquently and precisely as you would like them to, unless they're Neil Kavanaugh. Is it Neil Kavanaugh? What's his first name? The Supreme Court nominee. Kavanaugh.
I was going to say, the name Kavanaugh is so fun rolling off the tongue that I do not remember his first name.
That guy speaks precisely. Like that guy, Brett. That guy says exactly what he means.
Brett Kavanaugh.
And there is no other way to take anything that he ever says. It's like he's parsed everything past the point of parsiness. But with the Pope, it's sort of like, oh, the devil is, you know, responsible for this. And it, yeah, you're probably talking about like a sort of general broader current of evil that may exist at some level in your church, which is bad enough.
Yeah.
That's also bad. But people are going to hear that and they're going to be like,
and they're picturing a red guy with horns and a,
yeah,
what do you call that thing he holds?
It's a pitchfork.
A big fork. A pitchfork. Thank you. I wanted to say trident, but that's what mermen hold.
Yeah. Neptune has a trident. The devil has
King
his
Neptune,
pitchfork.
Yes.
Yeah. So not a good look for old Poppy on this one.
Though I do, the one thing that I thought was really, I like refuse to call anything the Catholic Church does progressive, but one of the reasons that he wanted to make sure it was like, every single members of every single chapter of the Catholic Church in the entire world was to focus upon the fact that like people were always like, this is so mean to my heritage, but people are always like, no, it's just the Anglo-Saxon Catholics
yes.
that do that. Like it's just like the super white bread ones from those tiny islands in the cold sea above Europe that are like so bored that they had to do that. And that's one thing that that he's doing that I think is very positive, is that he is shedding light on the fact that no, this is a global, like this is the things that have come to light, like tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. I don't think you could have expected John Paul II to do much of anything regarding this, given his age at the time that these stories really started coming out around the turn of the millennium.
I was gonna say, I loved that. You could just tell in his face, he's just like, come on, guys, I'm almost done.
Yeah.
Like,
but Benedict missed a major opportunity to grab this and do something about it. And, you know, we'll give Francis credit for basically saying, look, we're going to do this. We're going to talk about this. We're going to put all of this out there right now.
Yeah, like, and even if nothing gets
all
accomplished, at least we're going to be talking about it. That's always, they say, like, the first step to solving something like this or is to bring it in the forefront, to actually have a dialogue about it instead of sweeping it under the rug.
Admit everything, pull the Band-Aid off fast, and then move forward from that point. And hopefully you'll be in better shape down the road. We'll see. Vostok 2018.
Oh, can we just spend the rest of the show saying that word?
That's Vostok.
Fun. That is fun. I don't know.
That is the code name. It's not a music festival. Sounds like it should be Vostok 2018.
Wait, Derek, what is it again?
Vostok 2018.
Vostok 2018.
Actually means East 2018. And
I like the German or Russian or whatever that is version better.
It is the largest ever Russian war games.
Russian.
Including 300,000 Russian troops, about 36,000 military vehicles, 3,500 Chinese troops, and they even got some Mongolians in there.
Oh, because you can't leave the Mongolians out.
This is a week-long exercise. Russian President Vladimir Putin is going to be stopping by. Chinese President Xi Jinping is a guest of honor at the war games. NATO.
I love, like, they make it sound like it's a family reunion where you play capture the flag.
Yeah.
Like, it.
NATO has.
It's like, hey guys, let's simulate killing each other. It's going to be awesome.
NATO has condemned Vostok 2018.
You don't say.
As a rehearsal for, quote, a large scale conflict, end quote. Where have we heard someone be upset about war games before? Was there something recent where someone might have been upset about NATO countries or a NATO ally holding some war games with somebody that upset somebody else?
I don't know, but that dude sounds cool.
Yeah. I can't recall if our war games ever upset anybody else. And it's sort of like, wait, shut up. Just shut up, NATO. You know, it's like, they want to roll their tanks around and have fun and play soldier out in the middle of the woods. Let them do it.
I'm saying, honestly, the only reason I think that NATO is saying anything is because they haven't been in the spotlight in a while. They're like, well, we can pipe in on this. Yeah. Like, this can be something we could make a fuss about. Blah.
This is unchecked Russian aggression. Yeah. It's like, no.
Everyone pay attention to us again. The FBI isn't that cool.
It's Putin putting on a show for Jinping. And everybody's having a good time over there.
My least favorite category, but I get to talk about something I like. The Red Sox.
The magic number is zero.
That's not what I was going to say, but I like where you're going.
The magic number is zero. Chris Sale got back on the mound, threw some pitches last night. Was that where you're going?
Well, yes, I was going to say the Sox beating the Blue Jays last night basically not made it impossible for them to not be in the playoffs.
It did. But the magic number is zero.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. So that's night. What it is. I was going to say that's. I was trying to. The articles I read kept trying to use like really eloquent words to describe what that meant, and
magic
I was like,
zero.
I was like, you are the sports section. Just say stuff,
yeah,
so that sports fans can understand it, or really intelligent people who could almost care less about sports can understand it, but have to for their radio show.
Yeah. But the magic number is also 10.
Ah, enlighten me.
That's how many games they need to win.
Yes.
Or the Yankees or Rays need to lose in order for the Red Sox to win first place in the American League.
Well, what I thought was very, very cool.
The AL East, I should say.
What I thought was very cool. So yesterday was number 99 for wins for the Sox. And they've only had 46 losses this season. And using... I have no idea how they would determine this, but cool sports nerds used an algorithm to figure out like what they would be on pace to win, and if they keep going the way they are, they're on pace to win 111 games. And what I thought was amazing, I was like, wow, that's a lot. Is that a lot? I'm not sure. Yeah, the club record is 105 wins. Which is held by the 1912 Red Sox when they won the World Series over the Giants.
When baseball was a part-time thing that you did on the weekends.
I was going to say, when it was like you get home from the office, like, what are you doing, honey? Oh, you know, just going to be a professional baseball player. Yeah. I'll be home for the meatloaf.
Yeah. Yeah, you still had to maintain your day job as a landscaper or auto mechanic.
Well, I mean, it's a little, I don't want to say humbling, because it's like, I didn't do anything, but I remember, it's very humbling for me for the Sox to be doing this well. It's just like, as someone who is, I mean, I was in my early 20s when they won the series in 2004, I was actually 18 when they won the series in 2004, and then, you know, then they did in 2007, and I remember being like, there's no way the Sox are ever going to get better than this. Like, this is our, like, glory days. And I'm not saying that they weren't. Don't get me wrong. That era of Red Sox was amazing. But this is cool. Like, looking at this, I'm like, oh, so, like, you could basically look at that 2004 team and be like, yeah, okay, you won the first World Series in 86. Here's check us out.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
This, by the way, is what the Patriots do every season, which is why
the rest of the country hates us.
Yes, because they just keep finding new and exciting ways to set records and win things and just be like, oh, we're going for that this year. That's awesome.
And they're also jealous that we have that pirate hook hanging off the end of our state, but that's for, you know, it's a different category. Yep.
Serena Williams.
Yes, Serena Williams. She got in a little bit of a dispute with the, are they referees or umpires?
They're umpires.
Umpires.
I didn't know that.
I was going to say, me neither. When I looked, I was like, umpire?
I thought they were judges, but apparently that guy's the umpire.
I was going to say judges. That's what I thought it was going to be.
There are line judges.
And they're line judges. They're the ones that dress a little better and don't have to sit on that lifeguard chair.
The judges are sitting there watching the lines to let you know where the ball's in and out. The umpire is the guy in the lifeguard chair.
But so anyway, she had multiple disputes in her loss at the U.S. Open that ended up costing her $17,000 in fines. What? And now she's basically saying that it was... This is where the story gets muddled for me, though, and I'm speaking as a woman. So she said that it was like a sexist issue, whatever. And I obviously wasn't there. I didn't hear what went back and forth between them. But like, you know, of course, all of Hollywood's getting behind her.
Oh, of course.
It's this whole big thing. And I'm sitting there being like, how can it be that much of a sexist issue when it's a women's competition? I could see if there was like a dude up for a job and a woman up for a job and they were both really good and the dude got the, or like, and the woman was slightly better even and the dude got the job. It's like, oh, you're being sexist. You might still not even being sexist, but it's I don't know. For me, it's a more like easy to wrap your mind around argument. But with this, yeah. Well, I did some background research into it, and there is like a large history of sexism within the sport of tennis.
Yeah, there's no question, and I say this as someone who is a fan of Serena Williams and just blown away by her accomplishments. Okay,
I remember when they first started, just being like, those chicks can swing that thing.
Serena Williams is one of the greatest women's tennis players of all time, and I only say one of. Because she hasn't retired yet, and we can't rank her until she's done. She's probably going to finish
as the actual best.
The greatest women's tennis player of all time. And the fact that she can still play at that level in a game that is dominated by teenagers. You know, your peak tennis years tend to be like 17 to 23.
Yeah.
Because
tennis isn't like, not demeaning baseball, but tennis isn't like baseball where like, you know, or apparently football, thanks Tom Brady, but it's not like baseball where like, you can, especially if you're just like a DH or if you're a pitcher, you can do that into like your 40s, like your mid to late 40s. Tennis, you are bouncing around there the entire time. I used to play tennis when I was a kid, and like as a kid with a kid metabolism and like ability to run around and not have it affect them, I remember just being like,
yeah. This is a woman in her mid-30s.
Yeah, mom and dad, by the way, I hated tennis. Why did you make me do that?
This is a woman in her mid-30s who, by the way, just gave birth, hanging with an 18-year-old who is like bouncing all over the court like there's nothing going on. So here's what happened. Her coach was signaling to her and coaching from the stands, which is a violation.
I would say, which is a no-no.
Okay.
I actually don't know that, but I know that I imagine it would make sense.
You cannot coach from the stands. Her coach admitted that he was doing this. This is not up for debate, okay? Whether or not Serena was aware of what he was doing, and that is a question mark, her coach was cheating.
Yeah.
Okay? Her coach, this doesn't mean Serena was cheating. Her coach was cheating. The umpire... whose name is Carlos Ramos, saw this going on and docked her a point, or actually gave her a warning, gave her a public warning, said no coaching from the stands. Serena proceeded to lose her mind and started yelling at him. You're calling me a cheater, and you can't call me a cheater. How dare you? You're a liar. Just completely lost her game.
I would say, if you look at the stills of her yelling at him, I'm like, is she going to climb up there and punch him in the face?
Completely took her head out of the game. She misses a point, smashes her racket. She gets docked a point for that, which is what's supposed to happen. And then a little bit later on, she starts yelling at Ramos again. and calls him. And at that point, he takes a game away from her, which she wasn't going to win that match anyway. Let's be fair about this. But losing a game in a match like that is devastating. That's huge. You're not coming back from that. Now, before we get into the allegations of sexism, there's a great write-up on USA Today, of all places. Like, I never expected anything valuable to come from there.
Good?
Yeah. Somebody named Josh Peter over there actually knows how to still do the journalisms and came up with a little bit of history on Carlos Ramos. During the 2016 Olympics, he issued a code violation to Andy Murray because he believed that Andy Murray had called him stupid. Murray said what he actually said was stupid umpiring, but did not freak out.
And it came out as stupid umpire.
At the 2017 French Open, Ramos gave Rafael Nadal, took a first serve away from him because Nadal was taking too much time. In Wimbledon at July, Ramos gave Novak Djokovic a code violation because Djokovic threw his racket to the ground.
And we tell you about the times that John McEnroe flipped out, but this is only a two-hour-long program.
Those were all men. Those were all men within the last 365 or so days that Ramos has issued warnings to or taken things away from because they violated the rules. So if there was a list three times as long of women, then you could say, well, yeah, maybe there's sexism. There don't seem to be any.
Yeah.
Those are the most recent examples of Ramos giving warnings or taking points or serves or what have you away from players. And they were all men. So guess what? Ramos is doing his job.
Yeah. Well, and ironically, it's funny that you bring that up because ironically, I saw on, I wish I could remember who posted this on Facebook. It's another female comedian. But people have used that fact and flipped it on its head to try to say that it is sexist to be like, oh, it's a woman. Because like, well, look at how angry these men get all the time.
Yeah.
Like, look, like these are men and they get angry all the time and you're not giving nearly as much guff as you're giving Serena and blah, 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 blah. But it is, I mean, to be honest with you though, I kind of love that because it's a true testament to how possible it is to take the exact same facts and give them completely different meanings.
Yeah.
And completely different significances.
Now, Serena may be in the right that she wasn't paying attention to her coach and she wasn't cheating. That's fine. That doesn't take away from the fact that she completely melted down, behaved in an incredibly unprofessional manner. And whatever you think is going on, if you think it's sexism, whether it is or not, you don't behave like that.
Yeah, it's like the time I was on stage at a bar show in Boston. It had like a decent amount of people in the audience, but it was still a bar. Like people were just coming in and using it. And I was having a really bad day, and there were people playing Golden Tee in the back, and a girl giggling every time they made a good shot. And I finally just flipped out at them. And I was having a good setup to that point. For like the 5 minutes left, it was just awful. And I remember thinking, okay, what did we learn? You have to be professional or everyone's going to jump down your throat. Because yeah. This thing is like for the rest of the show, like I'm sitting there, it almost felt like when you pee your pants in kindergarten, it's like nobody wanted to sit next to me.
Yeah.
And that's right now, nobody wants to sit next to Serena.
She went full McEnroe. Never, ever go full McEnroe.
The only person who can go full McEnroe is McEnroe because it's his calling card. You know, like it's his... People, it's like a Happy Gilmore, how people go just to see what he's going to do next. That's why people like Johnny McEnroe, because it's like, okay, he's a great tennis player, but oh my God, is he going to lose it? Is he going to lose it? Is he going to lose it?
There was one year during Wimbledon in the early 1980s, somebody over in England recorded a song about John McEnroe that was lyrics intercut with clips of him yelling at umpires during tennis matches. And the whole thing was designed just to point out what a terrible sport and terrible human being John McEnroe is.
Well, and when John McEnroe yells too, do you know what it reminds me of? I forget what movie, maybe it was The Dark Knight, when Christian Bale flips out at one of the production assistants on set.
Oh, yeah, that was someone, like, Terminator.
Someone audio records it. Whenever I hear John McEnroe yell, I'm like, he's Christian Bale, man. Like, yep. He's just Christian
Bale. No, Christian Bale's going full McEnroe when he's yelling. Never go full McEnroe. Want to go partial McEnroe. Just don't go McEnroe at all.
So in entertainment news, John Legend.
John Legend, he's an EGOT, and he is
an EGOT.
He is the first.
I'm so proud of him. I love him so much.
He's the first African American EGOT, which is surprising to me.
That was a shocking. That it was the first African American man. I believe Whoopi Goldberg is an EGOTer.
No,
she's not. That was just a joke on 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Well, darn, that's really disappointing. Well, anyways, but he's also the youngest EGOT winner ever. He's 39. No one younger is ever. But I mean,
how old's Lin-Manuel? Is Lin-Manuel over 39 yet? He's got a chance to sneak in there.
Let's see.
I don't know which one he's missing right now, but I think he's missing the Emmy.
Lin-Manuel, how old are you, buddy? He's 38.
John Legend's got it.
He's missing the Academy Award.
Really?
Let me see.
Oh,
yep, he's got Tony, Grammy, Emmy. He's also, oh my goodness, this guy's life is cool. He also has got a Pulitzer Prize and a MacArthur Fellowship, which, if you guys don't know what that is, it's a genius grant where you take a test and they're like, hey, you're a genius. We're just going to give you $1 million and see what you do with it.
Yeah, I think he's got a Peabody Award, too. He's pretty much won everything.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, Peabody Award, Schmeabody Award, when you've won a Tony.
So, for those who don't know, the EGOT is someone who has won all of the awards. The Emmy, the Oscar, the Grammy, and the Tony.
Yeah, like basically the big four of the entertainment industry.
There are only about 30 people who've ever done it.
I would say, well, and the best way... I'd have to look at a list, but I'd say the majority, if not all, are people who both write and compose music.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, I mean, what's the easiest way to get the four big, most prestigious awards in the entertainment industry? But it's having a crossover talent, which would be, you know, you can write a score for a movie, the movie gets turned into a musical, one of the songs from the movie becomes a chart-topping hit. And then they do a TV version like that. There's your EGOT right there.
Tim Rice and Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. Also,
yes, I was going to say Andrew Lloyd Webber
joined the EGOT ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And is he a sir? No, I don't think he is. I'm seeing him listed as.
But I bet it bothers him.
No, he is. He's
Andrew Lloyd Webber's a sir.
Yes,
I mean, with a name like that, it'd be kind of. No, he's a baron. Aren't those two different things?
He's been Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber since 1997. He's got other titles beyond that, but it's when you talk about him, it's Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. And they all got in on the same thing, which
was...
That's
what's cool. It was the same project.
The NBC Jesus Christ Superstar podcast.
Which John Legend was also... He also played the star.
Also played Jesus, and it was amazing. Sarah Bareilles was in it. It was amazing.
I can't watch stuff about Jesus until I'm still too scarred from my childhood.
It was good. You didn't watch it?
I like, it sounds like I'm like being like, oh, Shay, you're so cheeky. No, like, Bible stuff freaks me out.
It was real good. It was a good, but it's like,
unless it's Noah's Ark, it's like, oh my God, pairs of animals on a boat. Like,
no, it's an Andrew Lloyd Webber hippie musical. There's really very little Jesus.
Oh, no.
You
know. I was gonna say, I've seen the musical itself. I'm just saying, like, once I grew all of my neurons and became an adult and renounced Catholicism, it just feels weird to watch Jesus stuff.
Yeah, no, well, all right, you missed a good show, is
well,
what I'm
saying. Maybe I'll go and watch some Jesus stuff then.
You should. They did it concert style in a big warehouse with a live audience. It was pretty neat.
Word.
Liked it. Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald. Oh, this is a... He said something about the Me Too movement.
Oh, shoot.
And everybody got mad. And then we responded to everyone getting mad by saying something that made them even madder. Am I in the ballpark?
You're in the ballpark of the background details of what happened.
I mean, he's Norm Macdonald. I know, I skim this. I know he did something stupid.
He did, is the thing. He was uninvited to appear on The Tonight Show last night.
Ooh.
Because of an interview he conducted with The Hollywood Reporter, in which he basically said Roseanne is not a racist, because he's known her for many, many years. He defended Jimmy Fallon for humanizing Donald Trump and said, Trump is human, isn't he?
Oh, I think that's the grossest one.
And he talked about, he stuck up for Louis C.K. as well, which is where you get a little, all right. But you got to remember that Louis C.K. and Roseanne got him to where he is today.
Oh, yeah.
And what he was talking about was after Roseanne's world collapsed because of a tweet, he put Louis C.K. in touch with her because Louis C.K.'s world had already collapsed because he likes to masturbate himself more than he likes consent. And that's a problem. So we had the two of them talking to each other, you know, basically so that Roseanne wouldn't kill herself.
I was going to say, yeah, he, I guess, the thing that people were the angriest about was he said he was happy me to, quote unquote, slowed down a bit. And that he lamented the people accused of wrongdoing, like Louis C.K. and Roseanne, were seeing their careers cut short, saying that, quote, the victims didn't have to go through that.
Yeah.
You dummy, Norm.
And you know what? As far as Louis C.K. is concerned, people are right to be upset about that. That's not the right thing. I don't think Valerie Jarrett was upset by Roseanne's tweet.
I was gonna say they're two completely different animals, because I agree. Whereas the Louis C.K. one, it's like, no, don't defend him.
Yeah.
But Roseanne, it's like, she's, especially because one of the reasons that we as America love her is because she's a crotchety, like screw you kind of person. And it's like, or at least kind of comedian. Of course, all comedians are not
but here's
the character they display themselves as, but which is why like I've had listeners come to see me do stand up and they're like, you're so different. I'm like, is that good, bad? They're like, no, it's just you don't swear as much on the radio. I'm like, yeah, we can't. Whenever you hear me say to Derek, can I say,
yep.
Yeah, that's me trying really hard not to swear.
So I, first of all, you know, full disclosure, I am a friend of The Tonight Show. Okay. And I have to put that out there.
Did you make friendship bracelets for each other?
I have a very, very dear friend who is pretty high up in the hierarchy over there. I've, you know, I'm familiar with the players. I have attended rehearsals and such for the show, and generally speaking, like everybody who's involved in it. That said, this is one of the most ridiculous things that I have seen since all of this politically correct nonsense began. Here is the statement that The Tonight Show put out yesterday after they booted Norm Macdonald, and I quote, out of sensitivity to our audience.
Ugh, I already hate it.
Out of sensitivity to our audience.
I was going
to
say, that's the voice you need to use to read that statement.
And in light of Norm Macdonald's comments in the press today, The Tonight Show has decided to cancel his appearance on Tuesday's telecast.
The Tonight Show has decided to wuss out for fear of losing ratings.
So the guy said a couple of unpopular things in an article that no one even read. Huh. No one even knew this.
Who reads, The Hollywood Reporter? People in Hollywood don't even read The Hollywood
they
Reporter.
They read it. I read it because
they
I'm
read
bored
Variety,
at work.
Actually.
Yeah, that's true. I read it because I'm bored at work. But it's like,
oh, that sounded very LA when I said that. Yeah.
I want you to tell me what Norm Macdonald said that was worthy of kicking him off the air. And if it's about the Louis C.K. thing, then you know what? Maybe you have a maybe. But even then, let him come on the air and defend himself.
Well, I was going to say, well, and especially given the fact that we are talking about a comedian. We're supposed to, even though obviously he wasn't trying to be funny here.
No.
We're supposed to push the envelope. We're supposed to make you just the easiest bit uncomfortable with our opinions. That's what makes us good, because we say the things that other people are like, someone's going to get mad at me. I really shouldn't say that. And to do something like this is to stifle the very thing that makes him a good comedian. Like, I remember the one time I've ever been fired by a booker. Oh yeah, and by the way, you still owe me $150. I drove to Plymouth for that show, dude. He didn't tell us we had to be clean. He said we could say whatever jokes we wanted. I used a word women don't really like in a context. I didn't call anyone it, but begins with a C. But he said, I really don't like that word. You're fired. For like a month afterwards, I was questioning everything that I did. Just being like, is this going to offend somebody? Is a booker going to fire me because this is going a little too far over the line? Like, and that's, and it's a stifling of creativity and a stifling of confidence, which you need a lot of to make people laugh. Like, to successful, not only make people laugh, but to be comfortable while you're doing it.
Did this booker's name rhyme with Jarity?
No, it didn't actually.
Oh.
He just doesn't like me because I work for Nick's.
Because I got
no.
I got,
this is a random guy that books. I was supposed to have a hotel room to feature in Plymouth. I drive all the way down to Plymouth. There is one hotel room for the three comics with one bed, and the headliner got there 2 hours before the rest of us.
Nice.
Who do you think got the hotel room?
Yeah, I got fired for using that word once as well.
So. It's really important to the joke that I have, though.
Yeah.
The joke doesn't work as well if I use the B version, the B PG-13 version of that word.
Tom Dustin, who is a well-known Boston-based comic, travels all over the country, told me it was the most intelligent joke he had ever heard using that word.
Yours? Oh, well, he hasn't heard mine.
And that's that is a badge of honor.
I'm going to say, and Tom Dustin, for those of you who don't know him, check him out next time you see his name popping up at a local club. You will see how like valuable and legit that opinion is. That's basically a credit.
Yeah.
Especially because he compliments no one.
No. Ever. In the history of his life.
He goes out of his way to not compliment people. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. He goes out of his way to insult people. In a loving way. I love you, Tom, if you're listening. You're not, because you hate everyone.
So, anyway, back to this whole Tonight Show thing. The context is important, because when he's talking about the Me Too movement, and he's talking about Louis C.K., and he's talking about Roseanne Barr, he basically sets this whole thing up by saying, sooner or later, somebody's going to put a gun in their mouth. And he says, I know people who have. And then goes into this story about Roseanne being distraught. He was a writer on Roseanne, by the way. He was a writer on the reboot of Roseanne as well.
I'm going to say, that was basically his first, like, I can walk into, like, a job interview or an audition and not get laughed out credit.
So, he reaches out to Roseanne, and Roseanne is so distraught that he calls the only other person he knows who's been through this, who happens to be Louis C.K., and says, can you call Roseanne, because I think she's going to kill herself. And the two, and this is the story that he's telling. But because he's defending Louis C.K. No, he's not. He's basically saying all of this online nonsense comes with a cost.
Yeah, like
people's lives are being destroyed here.
I was gonna say he's not so much defending Louis C.K. as he is using him as an example.
And maybe you, person in the audience, person who goes online and types furious things all day long, don't know Louis C.K., don't care about Louis C.K., don't care about the consequences of your actions, but somewhere there is a human being whose entire life is being ripped apart.
I was gonna say, and that is the important point to make, that Which is something that I think we as society often forget, is that underneath all the awards and cameras and money and blah, 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 these are still human beings. And most of them, by and large, have not been like the big superstar whatever that they are now their entire lives, which means that they have just as much vulnerability and lack of like pomp that we have. You know, like it's always interesting to see, and that's why, you know, like even when like a Hollywood couple gets divorced.